Hello, hello, and welcome to another podcast episode of Overpowering Emotions, where I talk all things big emotions, emotion regulation, and of course, resilience. We are on our journey of resilience, and we are in the coping section of this journey. And so today I want to talk about different coping strategies that are helpful versus not very helpful. Last week I did mention some problematic coping strategies that are obvious ones, like turning to TV or substances or bottles of wine all the time. Today, though, I really want to get into some of those really subtle ones that, you know, as parents or teachers, we might allow children to engage in. We might even do them ourselves, but it's not actually helpful for them in the long run. They might seem helpful, but aren't actually. And I'm going to be talking about different types of coping behaviors too. We know we can't get rid of emotions, even ones that we might not like, even ones that are really uncomfortable, right? But emotions, I've said it more than once, emotions are an integral part of being human. It's part of the human experience. We all face moments of emotional distress, challenging situations, grief, disappointment, rejection, all feelings, all emotions, they're important. And we have to have them because they're meant to be adaptive. Why would we have them if they weren't adaptive, really? We're all going to encounter a wide range of pretty much all of them, if not all of them, most of them throughout our lifetime at some point. Learning how to cope with those emotions, it's a crucial life skill, and that's really setting the foundation for emotional well-being and, of course, resilience. When they can cope, they can navigate with whatever life throws their way, all of the ups and downs, right? Any emotional distress that comes up, any uncomfortable feelings that come up in different situations, they can cope. Now, there's two primary coping mechanisms or approaches that I'm going to talk about today. One is emotion focused and the other is problem solving focused. I'm going to talk a little bit about when they're helpful and not, and how we and children and how we can support children to use these strategies effectively to enhance our overall well-being. I am going to try to start shortening. I know I can talk forever, and I have a feeling this might go on a tangent, so I might end up breaking this down into more than one part. But I'll get started anyways with emotion-focused coping. And that really revolves ideally around the managing and regulating our emotions in response to a stressor, to a challenging situation, to whatever is going on in our life. So emotion-focused coping, it really begins with a lot of what I've talked about in that month of emotional intelligence. So make sure you go back to check out those episodes. It's that recognizing and acknowledging the emotional aspect of the situation. Okay, so that's very important for adaptive, healthy coping. Oftentimes we avoid it, try to push it away, push away any of that distress, and that's not helpful at all. So we want to respond. We want children and teens to respond in healthy ways. So we want them expressing their feelings healthfully, but even if they're screaming it, that's better than punching it, really. So we want them to verbally sort of express their feelings or in whatever way they can. So when they're expressing their emotions, even if they are screaming, we are validating those emotions, right? We are co-regulating. That's really important. So when they're able to express it and regulate their emotions, those are healthy, important things. Expressing themselves can involve, like I said, talking to someone verbally about how they feel, but it really could be writing in a journal, it could be drawing, it could be engaging really in any creative activities, or even listening to music just to channel those emotions. That's really important, not as a distractor, but as a way to get in touch with our feelings and express them. So again, I focused so much on emotional intelligence before because it really is a large part of that foundation for effective emotion-focused coping. And so that's why you can see there is this journey and I'm progressing week over week, month over month with, so we can, you know, at the end of this journey, we've established a really strong foundation. So regulating intense emotions is obviously the end goal here, right? Even those big overwhelming ones, we want to be able to regulate those. So we're managing our responses. We're not getting taken over. Our prefrontal cortex isn't completely offline and there's nothing that we can do. You know, we're completely taken over with the angry Hulk brain or the fearful avoidance brain or the disassociating you know, not even here noticing anything brain, they can do what they need to do to self-soothe in healthy ways. So that's really important. I've talked a lot about acceptance, and we see that accepting emotions without any judgment, without trying to avoid them, without trying to push them away or change them, and being able to adapt to the situation, that's really important. So when they're able to do that, they're at a place of knowing that emotions are a natural response to life's challenges, especially situations that we don't have any control over. And that's a key piece here when we're looking at emotion-focused coping strategies. That's a major clue of when these strategies are adaptive. In any situation, even if we have control, we want to be able to recognize and note and manage those big emotions. But these emotion-focused strategies become even more important and are extremely adaptive when the situation doesn't really have a solution to a problem, or it's just not within their control. There's literally nothing that they can do. Here, they need to learn how to accept and manage those emotional responses. Right? And how do I move forward when I have no control in the situation? I just think of Viktor Frankl, right? In a concentration camp. I'm always going back to him, but that's a great example. He had zero control. It's not like he could get out of there, tell the Nazis like, hey, I don't want to be here anymore. Let me and my family go, right? There just was no control, especially when his family was already killed. There was nothing he could do, right? There's no voodoo anything to bring them back. So in those moments, it's being able to regulate, manage, come to that place of acceptance and move on. So that approach is helpful as well when emotions do start to become overwhelming or are normally overwhelming. So when we're dealing with things like grief or loss or significant life changes, because it's really allowing children to express and process those really complex, big emotions that are all, you know, caught up in a knot. And oftentimes those are associated with those really hard experiences. Emotion-focused coping really is a helpful precursor to so many other things too, even conflict resolution, for example, because I need to be able to manage my emotions, cope with them, before I'm able to engage in any constructive communication or problem solving. So it's really important. That's why I presented it first. Even when there's times where we do have control, this emotion coping is so important for effective strategies. So there's definitely helpful emotion-focused strategies, which I will get deeper into. You know, I have talked a lot about it in my podcast, and I will be getting deeper into it. But I, you know, a lot of that emotional intelligence piece is there too. But like I said, I really want to focus on some of the unhelpful emotion-focused strategies, which I have also talked about too, especially in the parent traps. But they cause more problems than not. So it's better for us to make sure we are not perpetuating them. That's going to be a huge help in all of this anyway. Oftentimes, people use these unhelpful emotion-focused coping strategies over and over again because they're reinforcing in the moment, because they seem to provide relief, but it's only temporary relief. It's, you know, in the long run, it's just making the problem worse. It's very problematic in the long run. So avoidance is the biggest one, right? And that's the one I often talk about. That's the one we usually allow our kids to do all the time, is to avoid. We have to stop doing this. Sometimes we avoid because we are stressed and just don't want to put up the fight, or we just need to get out the door and don't want to put up the fight. That's usually it, right? It's usually about our needs. We just don't want to have the behaviors and manage it. So it's just easier to walk on eggshells. But you're just going to walk on eggshells tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. And same thing in the classroom. It's just easier to do what we need to do. Let kids go, let them avoid, so that we don't disrupt the whole classroom. But we're going to do it tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And it's going to be way harder. We can still address it later on, but it's going to cost you way more effort and time, you know, tomorrow than it is today. So that deliberately avoiding any situations or stressors, thoughts even, trying to, you know, push away those thoughts or feelings, anything that triggers negative emotions, if we're avoiding that. Now, it can manifest in lots of different ways, right? It can manifest as denying that there's a problem at all. I'm not scared. No, I'm fine, right? It could be suppressing emotions. It could be withdrawing from social interactions. I'm not feeling good. I've got a headache. I'm just going to stay home from school today, whatever that is. It happens when, even when we try to help our kids avoid situations or we try to get them to stop their negative thinking, it can be really subtle too, like even a teenager who's avoiding studying because they don't want that feeling of stress and worry about the exam. We might see it if they've gotten into a fight. I see this a lot in like the junior high kids or even middle school, 5 to 9, but even in the high school. And I see it in adults too, really. We see it, maybe they got into a fight with a friend and now they're refusing to talk about it. They're not going to reach out to try to solve it. They're just going to avoid that person's not my friend, right? So they're attempting to avoid any emotions associated with it and even thinking about their friend. The problem, of course, is that even though in the moment that avoidance is really providing that temporary relief because we're preventing the immediate discomfort, it's not addressing the underlying issue. It's not supporting any skill development. It can lead to long-term emotional distress, because all of these unaddressed emotions tend to resurface and we have no way of coping. There's no skills being developed, so we have no way of coping with them. Another really big trap that we fall into, aside from letting them avoid situations, is trying to get rid of the emotions, right? We're trying to make kids feel better immediately. We're going to start doing breathing, just relax, right? We're trying to get them to calm immediately. Yes, they are important. Yes, they are beneficial. Proactively, not in the heat of the moment, right? In the heat of the moment, they will get there. If they're using those skills enough proactively and they master them, they can start using them in the moment. But we really need them to still face their feelings. It's not a, I'm feeling nervous, I better start breathing because I want to get rid of this feeling, I don't like it. No, it's a matter of, okay, I'm here, I'm feeling really stressed. Let's see where this is. Okay, I'm going to drop into the body. I'm feeling it really in my chest. It feels like it's crushing, right? I'm identifying where in my body, what it feels like. Is it more on the left or right? We're keeping our prefrontal cortex online. That's so important. When we can keep our prefrontal cortex online, even while we're facing our fear, facing that discomfort, then we can move on to what do I need in this moment, right? But usually it's just I'm feeling terrible. Let me use my strategies to get rid of this terrible feeling. We don't want that. They're never going to learn how to be able to sit with their feelings, that it's a normal part of life, that it's temporary. It's not going to last forever and I can handle it, right? Okay, my body's doing its thing. My anxious brain is taking over and doing its thing. I'm going to ride that wave and I can handle it. That is so important. So we might try to help avoid, we might try to help take away, make them feel happy. That's a big one that parents do. Just think of the silver lining. But we also try to distract our kids, right? We try to divert their attention away from emotions, usually by engaging in unrelated activities or seeking short-term pleasures. Here, let's go for ice cream, right? So oftentimes it is overindulging maybe in entertainment. So oftentimes we see a lot of excessive screen use. Food is a big one. Substance use as they get older. I see it all the time, right? Even in the grocery store, an upset child, right? Parent, the kid's freaking out on the grocery floor and the parent's like, here, have a chocolate bar, right? Or let's go get that ice cream to cheer you up. Or a teen who's feeling anxious about an upcoming exam and they're binge watching YouTube or they're trying to distract themselves or turning to excessive video gaming to escape from all of those emotions. I see it all the time with kids, but I also see it with adults too. So we got to look at our own modeling behaviors too. We have a long day at work and parents will pull out that bottle of wine. Right now they're modeling this behavior too. And that's not great. That's definitely a problem. So just like avoidance, distraction can provide that temporary relief, but it's not addressing the root of what's going on. There's no skill development for emotion regulation. Distraction often leads to emotional suppression. And when the distraction ends, you know, that unresolved emotions are going to return again. So both avoidance and distraction, it involves suppressing emotions rather than processing and managing them. Suppressed emotions, they don't disappear. It's like a little pressure cooker, right? It's just going to continue to build up and build up until it just explodes. So they're lingering beneath the surface. And you might have had this experience. I'm just going to go watch a movie. Especially something so passive, you're not doing anything cognitive with your brain. I mean, that's just going to simmer there. You're probably just going to feel like a bigger buildup here. So, you know, we're just resurfacing even more intense and unmanageable emotions really later on. Avoidance and distraction, it doesn't solve the underlying problems that are causing the emotional distress in the first place. It could be a challenging school assignment. It could be a personal loss. It could be a friendship fire. Whatever the root issue is, it's remaining unaddressed. And so it's just going to lead to more emotional suffering. Coping strategies that encourage us to face emotions, so, you know, expressing our feelings, mindfulness, that's what's going to lead to personal growth and resilience. Avoidance, distraction, all of those things, it hinders the development of those really important skills. And they can lead to this cycle where emotions are just intensifying over time. And the longer we avoid, the longer we distract or suppress, the stronger they become. So then the stronger they become, guess what? It's going to be even more challenging to cope with them in the future. So that's really important. So again, instead of allowing our kids to avoid and to distract, we need to encourage them to adopt healthier emotion-focused coping strategies. I've already said it. Expressing their feelings already, right? Emotion Intelligence Month, I've already talked a lot about this, but just to go over it again. So expressing ourselves, mindfully observing what is going in our body. How does it feel? More on the left or right? That's going to be really important. Accepting those emotions. We're not judging them. They are here. Here they are. Let's make a prediction. How long are they going to last? I predict 5 hours or never. But then, you know, 40 seconds later, oh, wow, I'm not feeling it or it's shifted. So we're just allowing for them to process naturally. We don't want to get in the way for them, right? Maybe it is reaching out to chat with someone for emotional support as well. The other obvious ones, like I already said, substance use, self-harm, denying anything is wrong, even though there's clearly something wrong. I mean, you know, all of those kinds of things. Another subtle one too that I didn't really talk about though was venting. Confessing our sins. I see that all the time, actually, where kids every day, they need to vent about all the bad things that happened, or they run through all the things that they think that they did bad just to get the reassurance that it's okay. And just dwelling excessively, that's not helpful, right? They start blaming themselves, beating themselves up for a situation. That's not helpful either. So it's focusing on those healthy emotion-focused strategies. It's related to emotion regulation because kids are actively engaging with and regulating their emotions, right? And that's what they need to do to be able to prevent any emotional overwhelm, to, you know, really reduce their stress and maintain a sense of emotional balance overall. And that's what's going to boost their emotional resilience. It's going to contribute to better mental health outcomes because now they have the tools to manage and cope with any of those emotional challenges effectively. So really, again, summing it up, I know I'm repetitive, but I think it's really important that we know it. It's really on acknowledging and addressing the emotional experiences that we have of any stressful situation. So again, we're not directly solving the problem. I will be getting to it. It's just that recognizing and acknowledging the emotions that they're feeling physiologically in their thoughts and their behaviors, understanding that a specific feeling arises in certain situations, right? So their response to a situation, and then being able to express and regulate their emotions so that they're not becoming overwhelming. And then if they need to, reach out for support in healthy ways too. Okay. But we can't always just sit with our emotions, right? We can do all the emotion regulation in the world and never actually get anywhere in certain situations. And this is where we turn to problem-focused coping. So I am going to leave it there for today. I'm going to try to make these a little bit shorter chunks. Thank you for joining me. Next week, I will get into those problem-focused coping. But for this week, just think about everything that I've already talked about and looking for ways that we can start incorporating turning towards our emotions, acknowledging when they show up, dropping into the body. If you haven't already started doing this, creating rituals, you know, if you're a parent at home, maybe it's, you know, right before bedtime, how are we feeling? Using that feelings wheel, dropping into the body. We want to start proactively practicing these things so it's easier when big emotions come up. Then we also want, or in a classroom, you could do this too at the beginning of every class or halfway through, you know, or you're going to give out worksheets and you say, okay, just drop in. How did you feel when I said we're going to do this pop quiz? Notice what's coming up with your body. There's lots of ways that you can incorporate it. It takes 30 seconds. The more we can do this, the more kids are able to start looking at managing their emotions effectively. And that's a key piece. So go enjoy the rest of your day. Help those kiddos be bold and courageous. And I will see you next time.